I Squared Wrestling Podcast.
Right, hello everyone, and welcome to another exciting and thrilling episode of the A Squared Circle Wrestling Podcast. Andy Quilton, as always, joined by Andy Boy Simmons. Andy Boy, thank you for joining us.
Thank you for having me, Andy.
There's not really any choice in the matter, is there?
No, we come as a pair.
So, yeah.
Cool. How are you?
I'm all right, yeah. Good. I'm rocked, actually, Andy. How are you?
You're rocked?
Yeah.
Okay, I'm all right, thanks. Why are you rocked?
I'm rocked at the news that you're... You've just left me.
I've dropped a bombshell, haven't I?
Yeah.
I have, yeah.
The man that never misses a date is now no-showing his second show within the space of 2 months?
It's over 2 months officially.
It's not, is it?
Well, it is, but anyway, so tomorrow night at the Portsmouth Guildhall, I am devastated and sad to tell everyone that I will not be in attendance. I was previously booked by a wrestling promoter called John Fremantle, who's going to be running a show at Worthing. And he said, he called me last week and he said, oh, are you still good?
Oh, last week?
No. So he called me to remind me last week, right? So he called me and he said, oh, I'm just checking you're still good for those dates I gave you. So, yeah, fine, John. He said, oh, but, you know, there is a show in Portsmouth that night.
So John Fremantle knows better than you.
And I was like,
at least he keeps up to date with his wrestling calendar.
Well, and then, but the John Fremantle rule is if you let him, or at least it used to be, like if you let him down once, you're probably not going to work for him again. And although I enjoy working John's shows, and they are good shows, but it's not necessarily my priority, but him as a man, I actually really like him. So
you've not heard of the Andy Quilden rule?
Go on, what's that then?
I don't know. We'll find out, won't we?
Well, if I'm lucky enough to keep my job. So I did feel then I had committed. So
you only told me about it about 10 minutes
and
ago.
And I did tell you about 10 minutes ago, but I did intend on telling you at the weekend. Obviously, I didn't see you Sunday. Saturday, we had a busy day, and it just completely slipped my mind.
Okay. Cool. We're glad we've cleared that up.
Yeah. So we'll have a punch-up after recording. We'll get through this.
Well, we're going to talk about a near punch-up you had in a wrestling ring later on in the episode, aren't we?
We are, actually, yeah.
So we can see how chapter one turned out before we write chapter two once we finish recording.
Cool.
You been up to anything exciting?
Not really. It's Valentine's Day, isn't it? I even said to her last night, about 4 o'clock in the afternoon, I said, you haven't bought me anything for Valentine's Day. And she's like, oh no, I said, that's good because I haven't really got you anything either. So, I phoned a florist about an hour before I came to you and I said, you're probably going to laugh at me and say no, but is there any chance you can deliver some flowers for me? And she's like, no way. And I was like, suit yourself. I won't ever shop you again the way you've spoken to me. But yeah, did you do anything? Your wife's in the next room, actually.
We had a nice meal last night.
Oh, did you?
Yeah, cooked it.
Cool.
So yeah, did that because today I'm at the Portsmouth School of Wrestling.
Yes, and I hope it goes very well for you.
Dedicated to the craft.
Yeah, and I'll be there Sunday while you're at home, and I'll be there next Wednesday while you're at home. So
yeah, but not a special day though, is it? Next Wednesday, it's just another Wednesday, isn't it?
Could be for it. So, could be for anyone.
So there you go. So you were going to organise a Valentine's Day gift for your wife about an hour ago.
Yeah, essentially. I thought I probably should send her some flowers.
Like you told me about pulling out of my show half an hour ago.
Half an hour ago. Yeah, I've had a bit one of those days, actually. Yeah. But I will pick up some flowers on the way home. I'll get you some as well, shall I?
So. I'll send you some. I saw a Facebook ad from a florist, I guess, and it said something along the lines of, they know when you pick them up from either the garage or the supermarket, they know. So you should be getting proper flowers from a proper florist.
I will. Just not the one I spoke to on the phone earlier because she was quite abrupt and rude.
It's a busy day. Probably the busiest day of the year for florists, isn't it?
I know, yeah. I'm also struggling to make a restaurant reservation. Lindsay said to me last night, the exact words were, we're not going to TGI's. So
That's it.
I was like, well, I'm out of ideas. So...
Yeah. Nando's it is.
Nando's or McDonald's, yeah. So, yeah, it's all good. We had a good Saturday, didn't we? We had Dean Ayers, the Twisted Genius, down at the wrestling school for what is, amongst the trainees of our school, anyway, is I think they either forget, neglect, or really don't want to admit how important being able to talk is. So, you know, there's a few good orators in this country, but Dean Ayres, I think you'd agree, Andy, is, as a manager, is probably one of the best in the country.
Yeah, he's definitely up there, and he's been around for a long, long time, and has seen he's seen people come and go. And I think what people should look at Dean, he's someone who's done all kinds of different jobs within the wrestling industry, and he's one of the few people who, in the day and age where the age of the manager is kind of gone, you know, you have to be skilled to be able to pull off that role, and for people to want to pay you to do it, because, you know, being from the promoter's side of things, it's an additional cost onto the show, and in many ways it's not an essential cost unless you really add something to people's acts. A great person to learn from.
Yeah, so I spoke to Dean afterwards. He enjoyed it, and you know, he said there's some good talkers there. He said there's some good potential. But
what I found really interesting though was that some people spoke very well who don't normally speak very well when we have promos, and it's almost like when we have visitors in, they want to show off, but they don't want to show off to us.
Yeah, it's mad, isn't it? I actually said that to Dean as well. I said, you know, you've got more out of him today than, which probably might go to his, you know, his coaching skills, but, you know, there are people who just bottle up and they'd rather kind of go, oh, I don't know, you know, this is the one that winds me up more than anything. Oh, I don't know what to say. It's like, well, you know that you're a wrestler A and you want to beat wrestler B. So don't tell me you don't know what to say, because that is the trick of every promo.
Listening to the anger in your voice right now, I'd be really scared to upset you, so I'll definitely come and have something to say.
Yeah, well, I don't know. I don't get it when people say
it's definitely a very neglected part of professional wrestling, the talking part, and I always try to explain to people. It's the same. Like, once you know how to talk, it's the exact same. You know, the psychology is the same as when you're putting your matches together. When you're wrestling within a wrestling match, you know, there's peaks, there's valleys. You know, you have to, at certain points, you have to get quicker. Certain points, you have to get slower. Certain points, you have to show intensity, etc., etc. And once you know how to talk, or you know how to piece together a match, the skills should be transferable. And I think that that's something that trainees often struggle to learn, which is why we've made a concerted effort. We always bring in coaches from all over the place to kind of teach the class, and from all different styles of professional wrestling. And we felt that it was important to bring in someone who was a good talker to try and give their side of it. So hopefully it's going to start to open people's minds a little bit.
So success all round. If I guess this is a plug, but you know, for anyone that might be listening who does want to get involved but not as a wrestler, we do these seminars. They're not just allocated to the people who come to our class. So you know, I was tweet the information. I was put the information on my Facebook page. So keep up to date. You know, if you decide, oh, you know, I don't want to be a wrestler, I want to be a manager, or the referees course that was a big success in December, we've got another one of those coming up shortly. Stay in touch and dare to dream, as we like to say.
That's the tagline, isn't it? I guess we should probably talk about what we're going to talk about today.
This is it. We'll move on to the big topic of the week.
So I put a thing out on Twitter saying, at Aquildan, Aquildan, saying, what would you like us to talk about? And we've got a whole list of things to talk about. And also, we keep a list of things. So someone did tweet to say, here's the stuff that you promised you'll talk about at some point. And we are going to still talk about all that stuff. We do have like a long list of stuff. But we just kind of like to be a little bit inspired by topics.
Or just give us some ideas, isn't it?
And it's nice to keep fresh with the topics, because we don't want, for example, we know we've got some part twos of stories. So, for example, cards subject to change, we've got a ton of stories we didn't have time to get to. But we just feel it'd be nice to revisit that in a few weeks' time rather than straight after the first one, in case that's not a particular topic you're interested in. So we want to keep bouncing from topic to topic each week. And this week's topic that we've decided to talk about is some of the worst professional wrestling shows that we've been involved with, either promoting or actually being actively on. A nice positive topic to get us started. What I will say before we get going is I think that people look at British wrestling as we're in this absolutely rosy period at the moment. But there is a lot of stuff which goes unreported in terms of not so happy shows. And not there was a time very recently when not every show would have loads of people at. So we're going to revisit those times. Just give you a little reminder of how lucky we've got it right now. And we don't have it, you know, there's a certain promotions which are doing very well, but there's also a lot of stuff which isn't doing so well. So there you go.
Yeah, maybe things haven't changed.
I don't think
things... What do they say? The more things change, the more they stay the same. Yeah.
And I genuinely believe that to be true, because I think that... So when we first got involved in wrestling, you had All-Star who were running... a very regular schedule. So sometimes they'd run 2-3 shows at the same time, right? And in the daytime, they might have a camp show and then they'd have like 3 shows that evening and they'd all be rammed. And obviously, there was a big knock-on effect from the Attitude Era and wrestling being hot in the States. And when WWE does well, traditionally, business elsewhere does well. The only abnormal thing that I would say about wrestling at the moment is when... So WWE's business is doing great because they've done a great job of building a worldwide... It's a machine, isn't it? But the stuff, the trends like house show attendance, pay-per-view attendance, TV ratings, etc. is down, whereas stuff in Great Britain seems to be doing very well. And that's probably one of the only things that has changed in terms of independently British wrestling's been able to do better without the kick up the bum from a WWE, so to speak.
Yeah, I think like a lot of British wrestling shows almost like a cheaper alternative for a lot of people. So... You know, when they'd have, like, Earthquake on the bill or the Bushwhackers
yeah,
or something.
Yeah, that's right, yeah.
Like, and
yeah.
We've touched upon it before, like, you know, if you can't, you know, if you can't justify 45, 50 quid for a ticket to a house show, oh, but we can take him down, you know, the Guildhall in Portsmouth or, you know, Southend Pavilion, wherever you used to go, to do that instead, so.
Yeah, now it's more of a brand. So, where do you want to start, then?
So we're going to talk about like really crummy shows.
Crummy is a strong word, isn't it? Sometimes it's,
I don't know, like
disappointing.
Disappointing, and also not a waste of time, because I always say to the guys, like Mark Sloan always used to say to us things like, "But why would you want to work that show? You know, with like the quality of talent on it." And I always argued, it doesn't really matter. You know, as long as you're safe. It doesn't really matter, you know, who's on the show or even who you're wrestling.
See, I think it's all about experience, but I also
think... But that's my point, yeah.
I also think, you know, like, you want to be careful about, you know, if you are doing these shows, you might want to keep them on the radar. You might not want to be posting about them on your Twitter account.
Or yeah.
Putting pictures up of you wrestling in front of 10 people in someone's living room.
Yeah, so, yeah, like, the amount of pictures that circulate, again, with that kind of thing. But, you know, like, social media is obviously there to advertise, so, you know... Anyone who we know, whether at school or not, might go, oh, I'm wrestling in, you know, some workmen's club in Birmingham. I could tweet about it and maybe help the attendance, or I could just not tweet about it and then just definitely not help the attendance.
Well, I think when you're saying like, oh, I'm going to be on this show, that's fine. But when you're actually there and there's 10 people there to post a picture of yourself, oh, I went to war with so and so.
Yeah, the amount of stuff you can kind of cringe at. I think that's because we're older now. We're obviously pretty well versed in how to sort of behave. It might not be the best word, but things to be proud of, you know. But
you can still be quietly proud of it. I just think that obviously we need to realize, and I think what we have the benefit of being able to realize now is because, and I see it all the time, I look at my Facebook timeline, you know, you get the Facebook memories pop up and you see pictures that you post on Facebook as an 18, 19 year old, and you're like, oh god. With the benefit of hindsight, we can see that these pictures are around forever. these comments we post are around forever. So therefore, it's almost like you're creating your own CV. As someone who's a professional person, you're creating your own CV through your social media channels. So, you know, like if wrestler A messages me and says, I'm the best wrestler in the world, please book me on a show, whatever, I will then go and have a look at their Twitter. Well, those people who get to that stage where I read the message, I'll have a look at the Twitter timeline, and if the first few pictures I see of them wrestling in front of 10 people in someone's living room, as I said earlier, I won't take their request seriously, you know. So that's why I feel like you just have to be careful about what you're the message you're portraying.
Which is something we talk to the guys a lot about their social media sort of portrayal, whether because I don't know if we've touched upon this on the podcast, someone that we know lost out on a very big opportunity because of his social media behaviour. So, you know, I use that as an example regularly. And if you want to know who it is, probably just come to one of my training sessions because I mention him by name regularly because of how badly...
I wonder if we're talking about, if we're thinking about the same person. I'm thinking about someone.
Yeah.
Who missed out on an opportunity.
Yeah, well, you told me about it.
Oh, okay. So that person may not even know they missed out on that opportunity
maybe
as well.
Maybe not. That's why we won't name him. Yeah. But at the school, I do name him because all that was the story going around. So I just say, don't think you're being clever, being sarcastic or rude or vulgar. Anyway, we're going off it. So the first, we talk about, you know, I said crummy, you said not so crummy shows isn't a great way. So anyway, in my early 20s, like I've said to you before, I was all about wrestling, get to WWE, That was all I really cared about. Well, that was all my ambition. So I knew how, or one of the ways to do that would be just get as much ring experience as you can. And this is only a minor tale, but this kind of gives you the kind of mindset I had in my early 20s. So it's my 21st birthday. So a lot of people go out and celebrate their 21st birthdays and they get drunk. And, you know, I was a bit of a, you know, I had a social 20s.
You dabbled with your Smirnoff Ices, hadn't you?
Yeah. Yeah, I wasn't even onto like vodka Red Bulls, I think, at the time. I used to just drink Smirnoff Ice because I could never stand the taste of beer. So I had a social life. I wasn't like a hermit sitting inside watching wrestling tapes all the time. But my 21st birthday, I get a call saying, oh, Andy, would you like to do a show? It's on the 21st of May.
Look at you just dropping your birthday in for if anyone wants to get any gifts going.
On our Amazon wish list. So but that was all I cared about was being a wrestler. And I thought, no matter who I'm wrestling, no matter how many people are there, I'm gonna wrestle on my 21st birthday. So I did, and I would just take a stab as to how many were in attendance on my 21st birthday.
21.
I'd probably say approximately 21, but that was kind of the number I had in my head. But that's actually just a bit of a coincidence. So I wrestled Eamon O'Neill, he wrestled as, who's like my best friend in the world. We went out there, we like killed each other like it was WrestleMania. But there was literally 20 plus people in the crowd. So I was looking back at that, but I don't regret it. I don't like, oh, what a way to waste my 21st birthday.
How did you feel at the time though? Were you like, oh, at the time?
Or maybe a little bit, because what a lot of these sort of... inexperienced promoters, what they do is they set the ring up and then they also set up 500 empty chairs. We always laugh is like, oh, how many empty chairs do we wrestle in front of tonight? So yeah, it was depressing on a professional level, but on a personal level I didn't care. Do you know what I mean? But that's just an example of the kind of shows that were happening and still do happen. But that was the way I spent my 21st birthday.
It's always really sad, isn't it, when promoters talk up how many tickets they've sold and how great it's going to be, and then they set out loads of chairs. Oh, and like, God, as far as you know, it's going to be busy, and then you do that little peek through the door or through the curtain, and you're just like, have you opened doors yet?
Yeah, I thought you'd said... I remember there was a show with Shane Douglas in Reading in like 2004. It was where you run your Reading shows.
Very successfully.
This wasn't. And it was Roy Brookside versus Shane Douglas was the main event. And I was, funny enough, for an Eamon and Five Star Flash, I think, in a three-way. It might even be on YouTube. But anyway, it was, as whoever's seen Andy's big shows, the place is ginormous.
Huge. Absolutely huge.
Ginormous. Yeah. And the walk to the ring, I can remember feeling like 4 miles long. Because again, there was about 100 people there, you know. And half those people, I think, were friends of Eamon's who happened to be coming over for a weekend. And so that wasn't my 21st birthday. But yeah, those are the kind of things that went on back then. You know, you've got a venue, probably seat over 2,000 people with 100 people in it. So
we did a whole tour like that, didn't we?
Yeah, right. Yes, we did. Yeah, for Brawl.
British Real Attitude Wrestling League.
That's right. Well remembered. Yeah, yeah. I've been thinking I was going to try and remember what it was, but yeah. Right, Chris Peacock was his name, which is childishly hilarious, isn't it? Yeah. You still love that. But he was cool. He was a nice guy.
I loved Chris Peacock.
Yeah, he did the ring, didn't he, for a lot of the shows. So
yeah. Great little ring he had as well, didn't he?
Yeah, yeah. You can thank me for that, because I was the one going around saying, you should use that ring. That's a great ring. Whenever the first time I wrestled in it. So yeah, we did 3 days, I believe, on the
trot. Was it three or was it more?
No, I'm sure it was three. 3 days on the trot, and it was kind of around the time FWA was sort of dying off a bit, wasn't it?
Yeah, and it was kind of exciting as well, wasn't it? Because you'd just become Brawl Champion, and we were like, oh, let's see how you do on top.
That's it, yeah.
And they gave you the ball, didn't they?
I was going to lead the Brawl wrestling promotion into a, you know, a new era.
And we do know the crowds. We do know from the Greg Lambert episode that he didn't think you'd make a good top guy.
No.
And here it was, your chance to prove to the world that you could be a draw as a champ.
That's right. Maybe, because that was just before, maybe around that time FWA were talking about me winning the belt or what the plan would have been. So, no, it wasn't actually. It was just after. But I beat Styx, I think, for the Brawl Heavyweight Championship in, again, like, must have been a 1,000-seat leisure centre in front of 80 people. But that's where, at least I remember, first meeting Tracy Smothers.
Had we done 1PW by that time?
No, 1PW was a couple of months after
was
that.
Was it really?
It was before 1PW, yeah. Okay. I met Chris Hamrick on the FWA tours,
yeah.
And he couldn't have been a cooler guy.
Yeah, so let's explain the tour then. So it was a tour, it was a few shows, and it was in August, right?
Yeah, July, August time. Certainly. So, yes, it was in August. Yes.
And so the shows, they were all in big buildings, weren't they? And they were all talking about, oh, this one... I think there's one show which was doing really well, they were saying.
Yes.
But by really well, we realised
just better than
it wasn't.
The others. Yeah.
And
Corby was one of the venues. I think they're all sort of Northamptonshire.
Yeah, I've got no idea.
Yeah, Corby was one I remember.
And I remember they had Chris Hamrick, Tracy Smothers, April Hunter.
Who, at the time, when I heard that lineup, because you got to remember, when these pros are paying flights on these guys, you know, it's not necessarily the money they're getting for a night's work, it's the flights, which can be ludicrously expensive. I did question, I mean, Tracy Smothers and Chris Hamrick are one thing, not probably the worst choice.
Yeah, but not like...
They're not leisure centre draws,
no,
are they? No, that's...
So I think Chris Hamrick, for example, he worked for FWA in the sense... But even the houses they had with him weren't amazing. But, like, Chris Hamrick worked for FWA in the sense that he was an ECW guy, and FWA was essentially a UK equivalent to ECW, and the fans knew who ECW were, so it just kind of...
Yes.
Rather, so it might not necessarily have been a draw for FWA fans, but it was certainly a welcome addition to shows for FWA fans. And so would Tracy Smothers have been, and Tracy Smothers was for the 1PW.
Yeah, well, I wonder whether Chris was thinking they just had ECW One Night Stand, so maybe he was kind of playing off that, maybe. Now I look back 15 years later, that might well have been it. That was right around that period. But April Hunter...
Yeah.
You know, wasn't she a fitness model? You know, if you're going to pick a girl wrestler, I'm sure there's 100 more recognisable names than April Hunter who were available at the time. So
maybe they knew something that we didn't know.
Maybe.
I don't know.
Maybe. So, that was all a bit confusing. But yeah, as we said, the houses didn't draw. None of them did particularly well, and they're all in ginormous buildings.
Yeah.
So one of them in particular was probably the size of Reading as well.
Yeah.
It was huge.
I remember.
With all the bleachers out.
Yeah, and this is... anyone who's run a leisure centre show or been to a leisure centre show knows you can kind of control in many ways how many people... You can make the venue a bit smaller than you need to make it. You don't have to pull all the bleachers out. In this case, they didn't really need to put bleachers out at all. They could have just had floor seats.
Didn't even put chairs out.
But they had the full setup out, and I remember that was where, for anyone who's like listening who used to watch IPW and JC Thunder and knows a JC Thunder storyline, where JC Thunder's line in his promos was, "My name's JC Thunder, this is my house, and the streak starts here." And the "this is my house" line actually came from his Brawl tour, and in fact, this whole JC Thunder story kind of spurred from his Brawl tour, in the sense that we spent a lot of time together during that tour, and I was like, oh, you know, I'll keep my mind open, see if there's anything that you can, you know, if there's any other opportunity for you to come and work for IPW, where I was booking at the time. And the "this is my house" line came from Jack Storm and JC Thunder were a tag team. I guess because Thunder and Storm, or Thunderstorm.
Thunderstorm.
Yeah.
Yeah, that was it, wasn't it? That's what they were saying. I remember that.
And they walked He walked up the bleachers.
But weren't they directly opposite? They didn't go up the same bleachers?
No, I think they were up two sides of bleachers.
Okay.
Right, so like, you know, there's aisleways down the bleachers and they had their hands in the air. Like, imagine like the Daniel Bryan yes chant when it's at its peak, but they don't bring their hands down. So their hands are in the air and they're walking up the bleachers just shouting out, "This is my house! This is my house!" And like, it sounds really pathetic and childish, but it was actually really entertaining. And that's where the line, "My name's Jesus, JC Thunder, this is my house," came from.
But that's always one of those things, isn't it? Like, happy coincidences, maybe, you know, when you do things sort of sarcastically or by accident. And then that's what spurns something successful.
Yeah, it's just like, it just gives you... And that's why I always say to people, take risks. Like, you know, because you never know when something you do, however silly it might be, might then lead on to something that you can then use to make some money with. So,
So I want to throw this story in here. Just a quick one was Rob the Gob was having his first ever match at Buckland Community Centre.
Okay.
Do you remember?
No.
Right? And he said, I've ordered some trunks, but they haven't arrived
yet.
Oh,
okay. Yeah, yeah.
Okay. So Marty was at the school at the time, and Marty used to, when he was Party Marty, he'd have sort of, you know, flary gear. So Marty just said, "Well, I've got these. You can wear these." Not like thinking, "Oh, this is your gimmick or anything." Marty gave Robbie the shorts, and then somebody on the day of the show said, why don't you wear these instead? And I think they might have just been plain black or just nothing. Just look, he wouldn't stand out at all. And in the end, I said, no, Robbie, stick with these. Trust me, these flary shorts, you need those. And he was not arguing aggressively, but saying, "Oh, no, I'm going to feel silly wearing them." So, and then something happened. And then I think we took the dark coloured shorts, put them in Marty's bag. And then this is a big, big no-no. Robbie ended up back with the shorts. And I said, "Where'd you get those shorts from?" He's like, "I went into Marty's bag and got them." I was like, if I wanted to swear, I'd swear what I said to him. I said, "You never go in anyone's bag." Like, obviously, you know, you wouldn't go through anyone's work bag. But he, you know, I'm not trying to expose him. I'm just saying that, you know, he just didn't know that particular rule. So anyway, this other wrestler who was on the show, I was like, "Why'd you keep picking on him?" And I was like, "I'm not picking on..." That's how short-sighted some of them are.
Yeah.
Was, "Why'd you keep picking on him?" I was like, "No, trust me." Like, in some of their minds, black trunks, black boots, they'll think they're going to go out being the next Steve Austin. You know, Robbie needed something. And then he ended up wearing Marty's trunks. And look how well he's doing now, you know? Like, if Robbie was a black trunks, black boots wrestler for the last 3 or 4 years, I'd guess he wouldn't be doing what he's doing now.
Yeah, I mean, and that's kind of with him. I mean, that's spurred on the his character was, you know, like, loud, and it matched his character that he'd been kind of portraying. And it also made a nice little touch for the Contenders division. So again, anyone who's been watching the Rev Pro shows from the cockpit knows the Contenders division, where we kind of introduce the trainees to the audience for the first time. And obviously everyone does it in black trunks. And we always knew that at one point, Rob the Gob, he was going to...
Break out
into the colourful gear that he'd been wearing. And I just said to him, like, you know, the more ridiculous you look, the better it's going to be for you. And for anyone who noticed, from his first day, he always used to come out in shorts for the Contenders division matches, and he'd take the shorts off and reveal his black trunks. And that's because obviously we always had in the back of our mind that when it was time for him to become himself, he'd pull the shorts down and have these multicolored shorts. And it was only a little touch, you know, but it was just something that, you know, that we added. And then from there, like, he kind of went, again, like, you might not have noticed, but like, it was all very gradual with him, the introduction of all the stuff. So like, the jacket came last. I think he had a wild elbow pads and knee pads, and they got added one bit at a time, kind of before people's eyes. And that's and that worked really well. And like you say, yeah, it doesn't matter where you are, what show you're on, no matter how big or small, you can always find something to be creative from it, and something which will lead on to something else in the future.
Okay, so enough putting over Robbie.
Unnecessary.
Here's a mildly amusing story from the Brawl Tour. We stayed at Styx's house, and Styx is a really nice guy. And he, at the time, he was married to a
Nurse Stephanie Scope.
Nurse Stephanie Scope, And so myself, James Ty and Aviv Mayan, we all slept in the spare room. And in the spare room was like a massive freezer full of food. But did you stay
there? Yeah, I was staying there as well because I got the text. So like, you can go on.
Yeah. So,
I was definitely because I remember when we got there and you needed to charge your phone.
That's right. So I needed to charge my phone, obviously. Priorities. And I assume I must have unplugged my phone in. And I want to say the next day...
It was after the...
Is it a few days later?
So, like, it was like... I don't know. So, say, for example, the last show was on the Sunday. Say, for example, it was, like, the Saturday night we stayed there. We did the show, went home. Then on the Monday, like, we got a text message. Everyone who stayed at his house got a text message.
Yes.
Which basically said that someone had unplugged the fridge freezer. The freezer had... They buy all their food at the start of the month. And the freezer had all their food for the entire month in it.
Yes.
And it's now all defrosted and ruined because someone unplugged the freezer.
We never found out who that was, though, did we? No, that was me. I'm really sorry, Stephanie, if you're listening. Yeah, she was never really very polite to me after that. But Sticks was.
So yeah, but Sticks was a lovely guy.
Yeah, you couldn't beat a nice guy than him, actually. So, yeah. Yeah. I'll send him a packet of like turkey burgers once a month or something to make over it.
The confessions of Andy Boy Simmons.
Yeah.
True confessions.
Oh, I could go on Radio 2. Do you ever listen to that?
No.
I can't remember who it's with, but it's very funny, actually. Confessions with, I don't know, I can't even say who it is. I can't remember. But anyway.
It's nice that we have this podcast now so you can kind of get this stuff off your chest. Maybe every week we can have a new reveal of something you've done.
Yeah. Okay. Fine. Yeah.
Maybe we get a little jingle.
Confessions.
Yeah.
Something like that. I like it. Let me just go back to the list. So we've done 21st birthday. So here's another awful show. So
awful show.
Well, I think this one probably was. So Phil Powers used to run some wrestling shows. And to be fair,
he still does.
I've wrestled on shows for Phil where there's been, you know, 800-900 people there. And we all know that is a good attendance for a British wrestling show. So So this isn't a knock on Phil, it really isn't. But one time he was doing some business with a man called Lloyd Ryan, who used to be the manager of Kendo Nagasaki, and he's also the man who taught Phil Collins how to drum.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Yeah, he taught Phil Collins how to drum. He's very, in the drumming world, you mentioned Lloyd Ryan, it's like, oh yeah, Lloyd's a very good drummer. So I think he's just recently done an advert for something that's been on the telly. I never saw it, but I saw it on his Facebook. So Phil and Lloyd were running some shows together. And someone had this idea that they're going to run a show, but actually not advertise it, just to see.
Hell of an idea.
Just to see whether, I don't know, word of mouth can sell a show. And we weren't in particular, I wouldn't say it was a particularly, it certainly wasn't a big town. It was somewhere in Dorset, maybe Dorchester, somewhere like that. And I just recently at the time split up with a girlfriend. So, you know, wrestling, like I've said before, like wrestling was always my outlet, you know, to kind of, well, at least I've got that to look forward to. And so I was looking forward to this show. I was traveling down with Eamon and who else on the show? Aaron Angel was on the show. Lloyd's son Damien was having his first ever match against Eamon. So Damien was once tipped for big things. I kind of felt
until he wrestled, right?
Yeah, I kind of feel like his dad was pushing him to be a wrestler.
What's he doing now? Is he still wrestling?
Who, Damien? Yeah. He joined the Al Snow Wrestling Academy.
So, oh, really?
Yeah, which obviously didn't work out great for him. So there was a show. We were in a nice venue. The ring was great. Again, venue empty. But in hindsight, obviously it's a stupid idea. But in a way, I'll credit to them that they were kind of hoping, like, we're not going to put a single poster up. We're just going to see if the venue...
It's kind of a self-fulfilling prophecy, though, isn't it?
Well, absolutely, yeah. In hindsight, it was like, it's ludicrous, really. But.
Because, like, obviously, if that's all you had to do was put up a ring and they will come, then everyone would be doing it.
We'd all be
they?
Millionaires, yeah. So yeah, that was...
Especially considering there's many shows which do posters and stuff and don't draw
and
at all.
Still don't draw, yeah.
Yeah.
So, that was that one. Yeah, so... Yeah. But you, Andy, you put up a lot of posters for a show instead of a terrible...
I did, yeah. I did a show once. So, everyone always asks me... when are you coming up north? When are you coming up north with Revolution Pro Wrestling? And I'm always like, oh, you know, I've got a game plan. I do. I actually have a solid game plan. I've had a, so I'm sure we'll talk about it in the future. But now more than ever, I've got a what I believe to be a solid plan in place. As we're building foundations and getting bigger and running more shows, etc. And I think people will begin to see that towards certainly by this time next year, it will be kind of very clear. But obviously, as we get
you'll
towards
be contracted end, performers, will we?
Who knows? You won't be. You'll be in breach of contract on a regular
basis.
Well,
contracted, that's different. I can say to Mr. Fremantle, oh, thank you for reminding me. Actually, I'm contracted for this date. See you later. So,
I'll sue you. Have you for breach. Breach of contract. But yeah, so anyway, back in the day, I guess there is a method to my madness, Andy. There really is. Like, people ask why I do stuff. There's always logic behind what I do, and sometimes that logic is flawed, and I'm not afraid to admit the fact that sometimes that logic is flawed. But let me explain this show to you. So this is I'm going to say 2013, November 2013, I ran a show in a town called Castleford, which is just outside Leeds, which is where Dragon Gate ran a show. The Castleford, and I can't even tell you the name of the venue, and we'll get to why in a little while. So anyway, running this show in Castleford, the reason why this show came about, the last place I wanted to run a show, this is nothing not offensive to the people of Castleford, but really the last place I wanted to run a show was in Castleford. However, this happened. So WXW were running shows, or still running shows, and they messaged me and said, Andy, we're going to bring Shinsuke Nakamura to the UK this weekend. He's working our show on the Saturday. And they said, either the Friday or the Sunday, we need to share him with someone in the UK. So I'm like, well, Felix, I'd rather you didn't do that because I've got this thing going with New Japan. And at that time, I just used Jushin Liger and Hiroshi Tanahashi. So I'd had two York Hall shows under my belt. The relationship with New Japan was just starting to flourish. And I said to him, you know, at this stage, I really don't want you using... And Shinsuke Nakamura was the next guy that I wanted to use as well, which is kind of important because I've explained to people before my strategy of bringing in New Japan guys, which was bring in the headline acts first and then start to bring in, you know, more guys.
Yoshihashi.
And introduce them. Well, no, Yoshihashi came in as a part of the
team. No, I know, but he was one of my favourites.
Well, I know. Cool. Thanks for that.
That's okay.
I've explained to people there needs to be a perception with, or there had to at the time be a perception of New Japan wrestlers. People didn't know who they were, but if you put them in big buildings, people will know that it must be a big deal because they're going into a big enough building to host them. And obviously, what I didn't want to happen is what Felix told me was going to happen. Well, you know, and bearing in mind this is only a year after I'd split with IPW. He was like, well, if you don't do it, then IPW will run a show with him. So Felix was really, you know. And I was like, well, this is going to be a joke because if they run a show with him, then they're going to run it in front of what we used to use as a changing room, you know.
Oh, it's Swanley,
yeah. Whereas, you know, it's not going to be a proper show, you know what I mean? I was just like, to have New Japan talent in the UK, we have to present them in certain way and have them in certain venues, etc. So I figured I'm gonna have to run a show somewhere, so I called my usual places, and everywhere was already booked. York Hall was already booked, and I was speaking to Mark Sloan about it, and he suggested using Castleford that they use for Dragon Gate, and I thought there's a good perception of Castleford because obviously the Dragon Gate show there was very well attended and was great and everything. And
not to state the obvious, obviously Dragon Gate Japanese wrestling.
Absolutely, so. And one of the big things that you'll find, and now this is something which doesn't get any credit at all, and people are just say like, oh, I'm talking out my rear end, but once wrestling's been at a venue and people know wrestling works at a venue and there's been lots of fans at that venue, it makes it easier to get people to come back to that venue. I could put on a lineup at York Hall and put on the exact same lineup at a venue that no one's been to before and people don't know about, and the lineup at York Hall will sell more tickets. That's purely because people know York Hall and it's already proven as a venue and the show's quality has already been proven. Even though it could be the same lineup side by side, the York Hall show will draw more. Unless obviously you're talking about Wembley or whatever, you know, a venue with like even more stature. So people knew the building. So I agreed to do the show there, and I'm thinking, like, it's going to be a heavily promoted internet deal, like, and Shinsuke Nakamura is an easy one to promote. For my money at the time, he was the most charismatic guy, and he was a guy really, I felt, translated best to our market in terms of, like, he was a real character, larger than life, and I think people would gravitate towards him, and I think we could have done a real good job promoting him, which we later did when we had him. But there you go. We later had him because I'd agreed to the contract with the venue and we'd agreed to have Shinsuke Nakamura on the show through Felix. Obviously, my previous dealings were all through direct through the New Japan office, but Felix is like, we have Shinsuke Nakamura on this date, etc. I'm like, okay, cool. And then what happened?
Tell me.
Oh, actually, Andy, we don't have Shinsuke Nakamura. Like, so the only reason I'm running this show is for Shinsuke Nakamura. Now you're telling me that you don't have him. So now I'm stuck with this show in Castleford. Right. And then the lineup we had. So listen to the guys on this show. Right. So we had Adam Cole, now with WWE.
Oh, really? Okay.
UR Nation.
Yeah.
Now with WWE, Apollo Crews. We had Rocky Romero and Alex Kozlov, the Forever Hooligans. We had Chuck Taylor, obviously New Japan Pro Wrestling fame now. Who else did we have?
Travis and Kirby.
Yeah, but I'm trying to think about the, you know, the
Once you rattled off five, I was like, surely no more than that.
No, I think every match had...
Michael Elgin, was he on it?
No. But every match had someone in it. So I remember we had Josh Bodom against Adam Cole. We had UR Nation against Rampage Brown. We had Travis and Kirby against the Forever Hooligans.
Marty
versus Colt Cabana. Yeah, we had a hell of a lineup, is what I'm saying.
That sounds like A, an expensive lineup, and B, just a great show. And
so what I wanted to do... was we don't have Shinsuke Nakamura now, but we're gonna load up the bill with a, you know, great talent, and we're gonna put on a hell of a show. And I figured we could do this through internet marketing and through local advertising combined, we'd still do a real good house. Unfortunately, though, we wound up drawing a total of 75 people to the event.
Oh God.
Okay, 75 people in total. Now, I had paper ads, flyers distributed through letterboxes and paid a company to put up posters around town. I later found out that I potentially put the wrong name of the venue because I just went from a Dragon Gate advertising. But obviously, with Dragon Gate advertising, it only relies on internet sales, not local sales.
Right.
So I put the name that they put on their stuff on the internet.
So Mark had got it wrong as well?
Well, I guess so, yeah. But yeah. I put, like, Castleford Civic Hall and it... Or it might have been Castleford Civic Centre, or I don't know. Like, so it was only a small thing. I think you should have been able to work it out. And I had a big banner outside the building as well. And I was like, this has got to work, right? And then I found out when it was Stephen Flood's wife, Elizabeth, she was dropping off UA, and they took him to the wrong place. Because they took him to the place that the poster said.
Oh, so it was a...
Yeah, there was a different place.
It was a different place.
Yeah. They took him to the wrong place because they took him to the place...
You could have had 500 disappointed...
I'm pretty sure we didn't have 500 disappointed people at that venue. But 75 people we drew to Castleford. And to make matters worse, so obviously it's a hell of a long drive, obviously from Portsmouth to back up to Castleford. In the match of Forever Hooligans versus Chris Travis and Martin Kirby match, again, every single match was great though. But we've never put one day I'll put the thing on demand. But the reason I haven't is very painful memories. but in that match, Kirby went through a wall as well.
Of
a building.
Yeah.
It was so I got a bill for the
that.
Wall.
Yep.
But to Martin Kirby's credit. He put his hands up and said he was to blame. So he worked off the bill for the wall, basically.
Oh, did he really?
Yeah. So, and very few wrestlers would do that. Most wrestlers,
I'd say
90%.
Yeah,
wouldn't do
one
that.
100 probably would. Yeah.
So so fair play to Martin Kirby for that, and I'll always appreciate that. And also something else. When I gave, and he might not want me to tell this story, but when I gave Colt Cabana his pay packet at the end of the night. Gave it back to me.
Oh, did he?
So, yeah. because he saw how much I'd spent on the show. Yeah. And obviously he was my champion at the time and I'd used it. But you didn't give Brawl their pay packets back.
No, I didn't.
but yeah, he saw obviously how much I'd invested in the show and I was using him regularly. And I guess he was doing good business over here, you know, working for
one
me.
Night.
And,
you
know,
generous,
and,
yeah.
And he thought, and he looked at it and thought of the bigger picture instead of the smaller picture. And I've always,
which is what, again, 1 out of 100 people look at the bigger picture.
And I think Colt Cabana gets an unfair rep sometimes. So, I'll always remember that as well. So some positives did come out of it.
Yeah.
And the big positive is that I've never gone back to Castleford. So
one day you might.
One day I might. But like the thing for me is I'm not going to, I'm not ever going to put myself in that position again where I'm kind of forced to put on a show that I don't want to put on. Like every, you know, you learn lessons from everything you do. And I've also got a, my method to running shows, it might be flawed, I don't know, but I learned a long time ago when I started running shows, my mentality was you shouldn't run a show unless you can afford to lose 100% of the money that you put into the show. So I look at any money that comes back is a little bonus. So,
which is what a lot of people do. They lose 100% of
their
money.
Absolutely. Yeah, absolutely. And I'm just like, so because I go into it with mentality of worst case scenario, just getting someone through the door. Yeah. I'm clawing it back all the time. But I look at it with that mentality because then it's always like a half full, glass half full mentality rather than a half empty mentality because every person that comes through the door is helping you out. And, you know, and really, I'm not saying I can afford to lose that money, but what I mean is I can afford to lose that money and still be able to feed myself the next day. You know, I might be destitute. You know, I might have to scrimp and save some money back up for a few months after that show. But, you know, at the end of the day, I'm still alive. I can still feed myself. And, you know, and you've just got to kind of take it on the chin and move forward. And that's what I did with Castleford. So.
And, yeah. Okay, cool. Andy, you just used a line. You said you will not run a show that you were forced to run. Something like that. You said 60 seconds ago. So let's bring up these shows that me and you ran.
Well, hang on. Right, I will not run a show that I've been forced to run unless I've been absolutely bullied into doing it by you, which you've done to me a couple of times, haven't you?
Okay, so I can remember the genesis. So I'm very good friends with a flatliner. He lives in a small town near Portsmouth called Gosport, and you can't deny that, and he admits it, he says, you know, he's not big leaguer, but in Gosport, he can draw a crowd.
Okay? He's a local celebrity.
Yeah, so he works on the doors. I always say, which I kind of stole from a quote Nick Aldis said that Kevin Nash says about Hulk Hogan. He says, walking through an airport with Hulk Hogan is like walking through an airport with Mickey Mouse. And I always say to Flatliner whenever I'm with him, walking through Gosport with you is like walking through Gosport with Mickey Mouse. Okay, so that's not the thing he hasn't heard me say 100 times before. So, I don't know, a couple of years ago, it would have been now, we found a venue in Gosport that we were going to run. It was a leisure centre. It was quite expensive, really, for the amount of seats that they'd let us have. But we ran it, and it was a success.
Yeah, so I think the thing was, it was expensive, but it had the capacity to hold more people. And we didn't realise that we were limited on the capacity that we were able to have. So, in essence, we had like a massive leisure centre where we were only able to use half of its capacity due to fire regulations, right?
Yeah, or so-called fire regulations.
Yeah, well, they might just be making it up. Who knows?
Which, I don't know. I'm going to assume, because it was at a college. I don't think they do like assemblies at college, but, you know, this hall was... but, like, this hall was massive, wasn't it? It
was
huge.
It was the size of Mountbatten Centre, but they were saying...
The size of half it that we use. So, if you've been to the map, it's not obviously the size of the whole hall. But, so, you know, we get, you know, the fire regs at Mountbatten Centre are just over 600. So, you know, anyway, they were saying we could only have 200 people in the hall. So, we're like, okay, we can run a small show, get our trainees some experience. Flatliner will be on the bill. I was on the bill and a few others. And, you know, we made it work, didn't we? You know, it sold out and, you know, great night. So we decided we'd run it again the next year. No, I'll tell you what it was. We did a big angle with a strongman from the South who's known worldwide within his fields. He's actually friends with, in real life, with Braun Strowman.
Oh, really?
Yeah. So, because they're both in that, or they Braun obviously was in that game. So, so we did an angle where Rob Frampton, his name is, he threw James Castle out the ring, and it was like, right, next time we'll do Andy Boy Simmons and James Castle versus Rob Frampton and the Flatliner. And Rob, genuinely within his field, he's very, very well known. So we thought, well, they don't let us have 200 people here. Let's find a bigger venue.
You told me we'll easily get 1,000 people into a
Well, I think if we'd all put our hearts into a bit more, who knows what we could have done. But anyway, my point is, a video went online of that night of the angle posted by Rob's girlfriend, I believe. Instantly, thousands and thousands and thousands of views. Now, I'm not talking like 500,000, but like, you know, 10, 15,000 views within like 3 or 4 days. So again, that doesn't always translate into ticket sales, but people were like, oh, Rob Frampton's getting into the wrestling world. You know, people from his world were interested and were certainly watching. So we thought we'd get a bigger venue. So, but before we decided we'd get a bigger venue, actually, I must have paid the deposit.
Yeah, you did. I'll tell some story now.
Okay.
So, yeah, so you'd paid the deposit on the Gosport venue, the leisure centre, where they limited the amount of people we could have. We obviously went into it thinking, when you paid the deposit, it's not your fault. When you paid the deposit, you thought that we'd be able to have fit in the full, like,
double,
so 500 people. We thought we'd be able to fit in, which we thought would be an easy sellout. And as you said, the video had thousands of hits. So, but all indications suggested it may well have done. But then, and this kind of links into it, this isn't by any means the worst show we've done, but it links into one of the worst shows. Not from a show standpoint, but whatever. So then we're going to run a show in,
the
Leisure Centre in Fareham. So I was talking to a company, they'd approached me about running some shows in their leisure centres across the country. And they just so happened to have one in Fareham. And I said, oh, look, there's this leisure centre. It's got a capacity of 1,000 people or whatever. If we use a full hall, we could do this in Fareham. So it was agreed we'd do this show in Fareham. Now, as we got closer to, like, they wanted a lot of stuff from us.
Oh, jumping through hoops, I think.
And I remember saying to you, like, I don't want to do this show. I want out. You can keep my half of the deposit money. Like, I'm just not into this. It's too much for what we're doing. And you convinced me to stay on board, didn't you?
So, just to, you know, to be fair, I agree with you. I wanted to, but I also wanted to kind of save face for Rob, who was promoting it and selling tickets. So, but these little things like, the venue sent you the wrong logo for the poster.
Yeah.
Therefore, they wouldn't promote it.
Yeah.
Through their Facebook
channel.
Yeah,
we had to change the. We had to get that changed. Because they had to go through. It had to be checked by their marketing team, and
then we had to hire 4 security guards for the night. And then, you know, because of all the problems they'd had at like MMA events, come the end of the night, everyone's like, "Oh, you didn't really need them security." It's like, "Yeah, we tried to tell you that, but I guess these provisions have sometimes got to be put in place." So, the show was neither here nor there. Quite a forgettable evening, you know. To be fair, Rob did great, you know, for a man his size and not a wrestler, probably even barely reading a wrestling fan. It was because me and Chris had been badgering him, going, "Oh, you should give it a go," you know. So, the venue back in Gosport. Okay, so this is in Fareham, back in Gosport.
So you've already put the deposit down.
I've already put the deposit
down. We've already gone somewhere else.
Yes.
You're saying to them, oh, I think you'd already paid for the whole thing, right?
Possibly.
But then, like,
yeah,
you're saying to them, listen, like, we can't do this because there's not enough capacity. And they're like, oh, well, you can run.
Just run it another day. You know, they weren't going to sort of throw my deposit.
Yeah, oh,
drain.
You can use it and use it,
yes,
for another day.
Yeah. Yeah, so we'd actually postponed it. We decided we'd run again the following May. It was a couple of days after Portsmouth Guild Hall show, the show where, heartbreakingly, Marty Jannetty was supposed to be on. We'd agreed Marty was going to do these shows in Gosport, which was going to, we were then going to put Marty on with some of the trainees. Not really the trainees, so guys like Ian Logan, who, like me, is a WWF.
Guys like Andy Boy Simmons.
Yeah, I'd arrested him all week. I couldn't wait. So it was going to be almost like a friends and family level show. With Marty Jannetty sort of as an added attraction to anyone who
but Andy,
you still
weren't happy though that there was that we could only get like 200 people in, right?
Yeah, so
you voiced this displeasure to the lady.
Yeah, I must have said to it 100 times. I was like, "Are you sure that's right?" But because I swear it's not accurate, but she, you know, she's not listening. But like, if she ever proved to me, listen, Andy, this is what it says: fire regulations, 200 people. So and it was her idea actually. She came to me and said, "Oh, listen, if you want to get more than 200 in, how about you do two shows in one day?" Which I'd never done before. It happens very rarely. But I thought, oh, well, and she said, oh, it won't, you know, the venue won't cost you any extra money. Obviously, the wrestlers have cost us extra money. But in terms of the advertising, we had two shows on one day and both times. And I thought, how could it be a disaster?
Obviously, what could possibly go wrong? So then I guess one thing that wasn't really taken into account with that two shows in one day. Now, I think it could have worked on a Saturday or Sunday.
Probably a Sunday, yeah. The reason where I probably got the idea as to why I thought it would work is All-Star Wrestling, I think, in like the sort of even like 08, 09, did a show at the Aldershot Prince's Hall. And I wrestled there a few times, and it's a really nice venue, and they sold it out so fast. Like, people talk about wrestling being in the boom now. You know, they sold,
I know, I always say that wrestling was in a boom then, it's not in a boom now. I think that people just have that misconception because there's a few promotions that do well and are great at advertising that fact.
Right, and you know, this power of social media, and it is is very powerful, gives that perception. So anyway, they sold it out so fast, Brian Dixon, or someone said, either the venue or Brian Dixon, well, why don't you do a matinee show as well? Boom, put that on sale, gone. All tickets gone. So like 1,000 tickets plus, because it's a nice big venue, in a day. So I thought, well, if Brian can do it, so can I.
On a rainy Tuesday in Gosport.
Yeah. So anyway, Marty Jetty, obviously, as we know, didn't come, but you came up with a great replacement, Andy, and that was...
Davey Boy Smith Jr.
Okay, so that's a man who I'd met maybe 12 years prior. We were a tag team for a few shows with British Beef, and then we wrestled each other, and then we wrestled again against each other on one of your shows at York Hall. And he always seemed all right. We were determined he was going to make up for it. Again, he was going to work some of the trainees who were bringing their friends and family to see them wrestle the Bulldog's son. And everyone was really excited about it. And then he turned up.
He was supposed to be... So he worked for me. He worked for the
Guildhall show
on the
Sunday.
Did a training seminar for us on the Monday, which to his credit was the best training seminar that I've seen at the school. I thought it was tremendous. So I was quite excited to be working with him on the Tuesday. And basically he'd had in his mind, he'd organised with Marty Jones that he was going to do a training seminar at Marty Jones's place on the
Wednesday.
And then he was going to come back and work my show on the Sunday at the London Cockpit. So it kind of all worked out nicely. Now, he was doing the thing for Marty Jones as a favour for... he was friends with his dad, wasn't he, Marty Jones? So that's why he was kind of doing that training seminar for Marty Jones. However, what wasn't taken into account was the fact that he had to get from our place in down north south,
north, yeah,
right up north to, was it Leeds?
Manchester.
Harry then got really angry... I spoke to him the night before, and I said,
at the seminar,
and I said, I don't know how you're getting to Manchester. He said, have you got anyone to drive me? I said, no, not really. I said, like, really, you need to get Marty to either book you a train ticket or a flight. And he's like, okay, yeah, I'll speak to Marty. But I said, listen, if it doesn't work out with Marty, then let me know. I've got a show on the Wednesday that he can do. I think you had a show on the Thursday that you could do.
Yeah,
right?
That's right. Yeah, we
can give you a couple of
and he was doing
couple
your
extra
cockpit
shows
show
there,
on the
and
Sunday.
He's doing my show on the Sunday anyway, so you'll already be in town for the Sunday show. So he was like, "Yep, yeah, cool." So I just assumed that was what would wind up happening if Marty didn't want to obviously get his ticket. He had obviously spoken to Marty. The next morning, I spoke to him. We sent someone to pick him up from his hotel in Portsmouth, and the guy. It's kind of pathetic looking, actually. That's a Beyond the Wrestling with Shadows reference.
From one of Harry's aunties, actually.
Yeah, that's why, yeah. You know, just tying it all in.
Well done.
He knocked on the door, and Harry basically told him he wasn't coming.
First, he asked for a phone charger.
Oh, he asked for a phone charger.
That man lent him a phone charger.
And then he said, I'm not coming. And I was like, what? So anyway, I eventually got on the phone to Harry, Because he's got, oh, so I said to the guy, don't go anywhere. He is coming to the show. Like, I spoke to him last night. As far as I know, everything's fine. And he'd sent me a message beforehand being like, saying like, oh, I can't do those shows, but I'll still be good for the Sunday show. And I assumed he meant the Wednesday and the Thursday show that we'd offered him, not the 2 days that he'd been advertised for in Gosport. And anyway, long story short, I got on the phone to him and he was very angry that he was expected to make his way to a Marty Jones training seminar. Bearing in mind, we'd paid his flight to the UK, housed him.
Put him up in hotels.
Put him up in hotels.
He wasn't someone's house,
yeah,
he was hotel.
Put him up in hotels, organised his... you know, organise his week and given him alternative booking plans for if that fell through. But he decided he was being disrespected by having the, by having us be like, well, I'm afraid we're not going to pay for you to go to a training seminar. So you can get paid and someone else can get paid. You know, that is that promoter's responsibility to make that happen themselves. Eventually we had a conversation, and I kind of explained my side of things. He seemed to see it, and then he said he'll come down and do the show. So he came down, he did the show. Now, obviously, two shows in 2 days, Tuesday afternoon.
Two shows in one day,
Tuesday afternoon, the afternoon show. They both dreadfully attended, but the afternoon show was particularly terrible. The Tuesday evening was much better, but still pretty pitiful. And I'd probably say they'd be the worst two attended shows I've ever promoted, I think. Would you say that?
Yeah, possibly, yeah.
And sure, like, it's one of those things where, like, the mentality when you're there, it's like, it's never as bad as you actually think it's going to be. So, like, once a show gets started, it's fine. But yeah, the afternoon show in particular had a terrible attendance. The show happened. And then between shows, so Harry was like, can I go on? Is it all right? Because I've got a long trip tomorrow. Is it all right to go on in the first half, of the second show rather than
the main event?
So I said, yep, that's fine. Absolutely fine. No problem whatsoever. We opened doors for the second show, go into the locker room and Harry's nowhere to be seen.
Yeah, so we're all sat around. So obviously we're doing the first show. Everyone's still sitting around in their kit. Everyone's chattering and stuff. And Harry, was on his phone all day. And I don't know the man. Do you know what I mean? That might be regular behaviour. But he reminded me a lot of Luke Betts, constantly looking down at his phone. So I just saw Harry pick up his bag and leave the room. And I didn't really think much of it. Penny dropped, I think, 5 minutes later. I was like, I think he's gone. I think he's done this first show and thought, sod this, I'm going home. So then I come to you and I say, Andy, I think he's gone. And you're like, no, he wouldn't do that. Because he had one of his friends with him, a driver, this other chap was nowhere to be seen. So, and you're like, no, he'll come back.
Because I'd spoken to him like moments earlier.
Right, and it wasn't an issue. Yeah. So, I guess the next step of the story was, of course, doors are opening in 5 minutes.
Doors were actually open.
Doors were open and you get the message.
Yeah, and then he sent me a message being like, I'm sorry, Andy, I'm not doing this show. I want to build up my reputation in the UK. Doing shows like this doesn't help. Blah, blah, blah. I'll be at your show on Sunday. So I'm like, I had no idea if he would turn up or not. But I was just like, oh, okay, whatever. And like my main concern is obviously always just trying to deliver what we advertise for the paying fans. And what I thought, like, you know, to me, so he said he didn't want to be involved in shows like that. And again, I guess that goes back to what we were talking about earlier. You know, people don't want to be pictured in front of no people. They don't. It's not good for your social media presence. But it was a local show that no one was... It was completely off the radar, you know. And he was on all the posters, and a lot of posters did go out around Gosport. So, you know...
Yeah, there was... There were people there who'd brought their WWE encyclopedias to all...
I think the evening show was probably about, would you say, 70 people...
Yeah, 1,700 people probably. It was better than the afternoon, like we said.
So, you know, with that evening show, and I remember when we announced that he wasn't going to be there, one of the kids started crying, you know, because they wanted to see Harry Smith. He'd been advertised. And it, you know, and that kind of broke my heart seeing that, because, you know, at the end of the day, to me, you make one fan at a time, and that's what British wrestling is all about. We make one fan at a time. You know, it's every single time we make a new fan, that's a huge difference, because if you look at the scale of it, you know, for someone who wants to change his reputation or build a reputation within the UK, that was certainly not a very good way about going about it. And obviously, you know, I spoke to Harry on the Sunday. He did come and do the show at the cockpit on the Sunday. I spoke to him, and he was apologetic, and it's kind of almost like we both wanted to forget about it. And like everything's fine as you can, you know, as fine as you can walk out on a show. And, you know, it's not like I'm going to stand there and say horrible stuff about him. It was just disappointing that that's what happened. And also because of that training seminar we had on the Monday, which was so great. And obviously our links with New Japan, it would have just been great to have him in as a regular in Revolution Pro Wrestling. And that's a bit that upsets me the most, really, because I think he really, you know, after that, it's very hard to justify doing anything in the future, which is, you know, I think that's a real shame. And obviously those fans, even if there was only 70 fans who came to see him, they, you know, or maybe not specifically him, but a lot of people there did come to see him. But if only one person came to see him and you leave that person disappointed, to me, that's a sad thing.
Yeah, so. And there certainly was more than one, because a couple of Flatliners friends who are wrestling fans, they I've spoke to them since. It was the night I met them, and they're like, oh, we have big wrestling nights. We watch RPW On Demand nights. We have WWE Network nights. And they were coming specifically because they had been to like our shows before in Gosport, but they were coming specifically because Harry was on the show. So it wasn't just one, you know. You know, once you've got another 10 lads who come up to have a good night, you know, you're sitting there and you go, that's quite a high percentage of people, actually, that have... You've let them down specifically, so...
Yeah, and like I say, like, my style's not to slag on people, because, you know, we don't know what was going through his head at the time, and, you know, I'm sure that he regrets it just as much as we regret it, and kind of just wish the whole thing didn't happen. And again, the whole thing was designed... It wasn't designed to be, like, a huge show. It was designed to be a trainee show, and it was designed to have... it was designed to have the trainees have the experience of working someone in a very low-pressure environment and completely under the radar. So... you know, that's why we don't, you know, like, again, for it's very, very rare we have a miss with the trainee shows in terms of attendances. I think probably maybe four times in total since we've been doing trainee shows, we've had low attendances. But, you know, it's just unfortunate. And it's not really a good lesson to our trainees either, is it? You know, so.
Yeah. But there you go. I think that ties in nicely with the fact that we started with me no-showing tomorrow.
And then
we go home on Harry Smith going home. So
there we go.
Yeah.
So that'll do for today. Hopefully that seemed like a very negative end of the podcast, but it wasn't really, was it? That Gosport show actually was a good little show. Everyone enjoyed themselves.
Yeah. It wasn't too good for or too bad for Donovan Dijak, was it?
Well, see, there you go.
Look what he's doing now. You know, where's he today?
Absolutely,
he's been at the performance
centre
all day.
Yeah, he was on the shows, and he was obviously we were just filling his week again. Like, he was there for my shows, the Guildhall, and then the cockpit, and we were just filling his week, and he had a great time.
I'm just picturing Harry Smith versus Donovan Dijak at Riverside with a very low ceiling.
Yeah.
Yeah, that'd have been a match for the ages there.
So yeah, there you go. That'll do us for this week. But we'll be back next week with more wrestling shenanigans.
Yeah.
And I'll tell you what you missed out on at the Portsmouth Guildhall.
Oh, I'm gonna catch up
tomorrow.
On RPW On Demand.
Good.
Yeah.
RPWondemand.com.
See who you replace me with this time.
Yeah. We'll see.
Right. Well, thanks for coming, and thanks for downloading. And big shout out to Dan Ambrose, who sent us a nice message today. One of your old compadres.
Absolutely, yeah. I'll tell some stories of some shows we attended. But yeah, I actually went to my first ever wrestling training, per se, with Dan, which was a wrestling referee course, and it was all Dan's idea. So he'd been a wrestler. He'd trained to wrestle with Alex Shane, and then he'd done a summer camp with Mark Sloan, hurt his knee, and as a result, realised wrestling wasn't for him, but then decided that maybe refereeing was. So
just wanted to be involved.
He said he was coming along to his training seminar. Do I want to come? I said yes, and the rest is history.
Here
so
we are.
Thanks very much, Dan.
Cool. Yeah, thanks for that, Dan, for making this podcast possible. So follow me on Twitter at BoySimmonz, at Boy Simmons.
And at A Quildan, AQUILDAN. We'll speak to you next week. See you later.
Laters.
Bye.
Laters.
Bye.
Laters.
Bye.